Nehemiah chapter 6. This lesson will cover all of chapter 6. And then some of the lessons coming after this will be kind of grouping some of the chapters together as we kind of move through and finish the study of Nehemiah here soon. We're not going to be done the first of the year. We're going to kind of roll over the first of the year a little bit before we get into the Gospel of John. A couple of weeks, I think, maybe. Something like that. But here we are in chapter 6. And seeing again here some of the strengths of Nehemiah as his faith in God is going to be tested again. And his leadership abilities are going to be tested again. But you can't help but be inspired, really, by the strength and the courage that Nehemiah continues to exhibit. As we get into this chapter, we see that really, I mean, he's tested in a way where he has to really have an understanding of what's going on. He has to be very perceptive about what's going on. And has to make some difficult decisions, as he's done already just a number of times. You know, we have seen one obstacle from another after another that has come up with regard to trying to build the walls around the city of Jerusalem. Well, basically, now the walls are done, as we see in this chapter. The gates have to be hung yet. That happens very soon thereafter. But it's kind of like the enemies are going to take one last swing here, you know, at trying to stop the progress and to back everything up. But Nehemiah is not going to fall for their ploy. And really, they try to trick him. And I'm not so sure that I would have caught on as quick as he did, because they're a little bit sly about how they did this. But that's part of the story. Sometimes it's hard to know who's really on your side or who's not. Or maybe to turn it another way, sometimes it's a little bit hard to know who's on God's side and who is not. At least up front or initially. It all comes out in time, we know. But sometimes up front, it's a little bit hard to know those things. And so with Nehemiah, we notice that he had a clear head and used wisdom in making some choices and decisions, trying to sort out the good from the bad, the evil from the good. And it's helpful to us, I think, to look at those things. And basically, in this chapter, his enemies try to distract him. They try to cause him to take his eye off the ball, so to speak. And but ultimately, he recognizes their evil intent and just kind of makes some good choices and decisions. Let's start reading the chapter here. Chapter 6, Nehemiah. We begin at verse 1. When word came to Sanballat, and Tobiah, and Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall, and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors in the gate, Sanballat and Geshem sent me a message. Come, let us meet together in the village, or in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. But they were scheming to harm me. So I sent messengers to them with this reply, I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? Four times they sent me the same message, and each time I gave them the same answer. Then the fifth time, Sanballat sent his aide to me with the same message, and in his hand was an unsealed letter in which was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshem says it is true, that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt, and therefore you are building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you are about to become their king and have even appointed prophets to make this proclamation about you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. Now this report will get back to the king. So come, let us confer together. I sent him this reply. Nothing like what you are saying is happening. You are just making it up out of your mind. They were all trying to frighten us, thinking their hands would get too weak for the work and it will not be completed. But I prayed, now strengthen my hands. So now we kind of get a little description here of the story as it goes on. So the walls are basically finished. The gates aren't hung. But the walls are done, and the enemy's going to take one more swing here at trying to make some changes and trying to stop what what progress has been made. If the gates aren't hung and if the leader is taken out of the city and the people are confused and nobody to lead them, well, the enemies could walk right in through the gates because there's no gates hung, or walk through the opening in the wall. And so this was their last ploy here, sending this letter time and again. You know, the walls of Jerusalem were finished, but the enemies were not. They were still going to try to see what they could do to stop what had been done here. And so think about this, and I'm looking for your responses on this. What was the purpose of the letters to Nehemiah? What were they trying to do with this tactic? I mean, the letters sound harmless enough, don't they?
Intimidation,
yeah. Yeah, I think it's a good way of looking at that. What else could you say?
Dishearten.
Yeah, dishearten them maybe. Yeah, like I can't believe they're still going on with this. Another hand somewhere. There.
It seemed like they wanted to get him away from the city so they could kill him.
Yeah, what would happen here if they, I mean, two things that I see. Number one, they could kill him, you know, pretty easily. They get him out here on the plain, far away from the city, and they would outnumber him. They could kill him. And just to get him away from the city, what would that do? Yeah, keep him away from the work? Yeah, it would do that. And sometimes when there's just a void of leadership, what happens?
You slow down and or stop.
Yeah, things change. The work slows down or it comes to a stop or disorganization. You know, all these kinds of things happen. So, you know, but Nehemiah saw through this. And you know, when the first letter or two come, I mean, if you think about this a little bit, would you have understood what they were doing? I mean, when the first letter or two came that just basically said, you know, come, let us meet, you know, together here. Let's talk about some of this. On one hand, sounds harmless enough, right?
Well, they've already proven that their character is
not
that great. So,
yeah.
You know, I would be skeptical about anything like
that. I would like to think that I would have thought first letter like, oh, something's up here, you know, because you just can't be too gullible. Sometimes we are, though. I mean, if we applied it in some other ways, we think about how Satan comes at us at times. In some ways, that looks pretty harmless. But when he's behind, there's nothing harmless about it. And it's the same thing with these enemies right here. There's some application there we can make. Anything that has to do with these enemies, those who are the detractors of those who are trying to do the will of God, it can't be good. If they are offering or suggesting anything that changes the course that God has directed, really, because we've seen over and over God's hand was with them. And so anything that they would suggest that takes away from the work that God has given them to do can't be good. And we can make application in our lives too. Anything that anyone would want us to do that takes us away from the work that God would want us to do cannot be from God. And sometimes we can be a little slow to see that.
Well, somebody else will say this, so I might as well say it. If your enemies invite you to oh no, just say oh no.
Oh no, you're right. Very well.
Joe?
Yeah.
Sheds light in a way on what they're doing in a bad way. And I think, you know, maybe that's what, it's hard to understand what the motives of these men were to me. They just seemed like they just didn't like it. You know, I'm not sure what it was.
Right. I've thought some of the same things. They were opposed to anything that God was for. I mean, we can see that. We understand that. What were some of their other ulterior motives? Was it they were losing commerce? I don't know. I don't know if that's just really revealed to us so much. But they were opposed to God. I mean, that part we can see. You know, there was something said here in the latter part of our reading, you know, when they sent the fifth letter. There was something else that was said here. You know, that it's reported among the nations, and Gershom, you know, confirms it to be true. Well, he's one of the enemies too, so what's his confirmation got to do with anything? You know, doesn't mean anything to Nehemiah. You know, he's that basically saying, you know, that you and the Jews are planning a revolt. And you know we have a king in Judah, and he's going to hear about these things. I mean, basically he's saying that we're going to make sure the king hears this is the story. That you're planning a revolt, and these people are on your side, and that you've already proclaimed prophets that's going to announce you as king of Jerusalem. And so this is going to go to the king of Judah. So, I mean, now they're kind of pulling out like the last card, so to speak. You know, and really putting the pressure on. Trying to see if they could get Nehemiah to respond and say, that's not true. I'll come and tell you what's right. You know, do anything they can to get him out of the city. Yeah, a couple of things you could think. I mean, number one is, and I want your response, how does it make you want to respond when there's an untruth told about you? What's your first reaction?
Go to the source.
Yeah, you want to take care of this. I mean, you want to say, no, that's not right. You don't know what you're talking about. Let me tell you what's really going on. That's the first response. What else would you say?
Sort of like that, but a little bit different would be defend yourself.
Yes.
If someone attacks your honor or attacks you, I mean, as physically,
respond.
Yeah. And Nehemiah is very admirable in that way, in that he is doing a great work.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't really care that much about defending himself.
Right.
He's worried about doing what God wants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
It seems that Sam, the first letters he sent were sealed.
Yeah.
But when he said,
what's up with that? I think there's something to that, you know. I mean, he's trying to spread this news, you know, this negative news in such a way. And so now something has come to Nehemiah. Here's this letter that has come to him unsealed. I mean, it specifies it came to him unsealed. That is, others have seen this or have already read it. And so now others could be starting to think, well, hey, what is Nehemiah up to here? Has he actually made his own prophets? Is there going to be some kind of an announcement here that I'm not aware of? So you see that, you see how that negative thinking is going like that. How do you respond to that? I mean, when you hear something that is said that's untrue about you and casts you in a negative way, don't you want to jump on that right now? What's Nehemiah do? I mean, for sure, Sanballat and those thought, I mean, this will get them. I mean, we're going to get a rise out of him this time. He'll come out of the city to straighten this out. Don't you suppose that's what they were trying to do? That's what they were expecting? That's what they were wanting? I mean, when someone tells an untruth about us, I mean, for most of us, that's pretty easy to get a rise out of us. I mean, when someone starts lying about you, now, you know, unless you talk about defending your honor, so to speak, I mean, that's getting to the core right there. But even here, Nehemiah's response is measured. It's not that he's not going to respond, but it's measured. Because if he had responded by going out to them and sorting this thing out, it would have got sorted out all right. They're waiting on him. And he knew that. Nehemiah, you know, denies, you know, their accusations. I mean, in verse 9, when he said, he writes there, they were all trying to frighten. They're thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and it will not be completed. That's why they did it. And so he understood that and he saw that. Let's think here for a minute about how our response might be when someone says something bad about us. Someone lies about us. I mean, it's just totally untrue. How do we respond? What would you think? Earl?
It's interesting to me that they accuse Nehemiah of having hired prophets to proclaim him as king, which was totally false. That's what they accused him of doing. But that's exactly what they had done. We'll find later in the chapter that they had hired a prophet to make
right in Jerusalem.
Right there in Jerusalem. But the point I want to make about that is oftentimes when people falsely accuse someone of something, they accuse them of doing the kinds of things that they would do themselves.
Yeah. Good point. Key point. So how do we respond to that? Daryl?
Mm-hmm. So sometimes just not responding at all could be the better thing to do, because you might appear guilty by responding.
Have you noticed sometimes that even when you don't respond, at least not initially, it still all kind of comes out, the truth, that is? It still all comes out, sometimes without you even saying anything initially. I mean, especially if something is said, you know, such in a case as this, where in Jerusalem, Nehemiah already had a reputation, didn't he? Among those that were living in and around Jerusalem, he had his own reputation. And let's face it, it was good. He had a good reputation. So even though, you know, the enemies were trying to spread some evil report about him, I wonder how many really believed that. Because they knew Nehemiah.
I find it interesting that in Proverbs it says, do not answer a fool according to his folly. And I think two verses later, answer a fool according to his folly. And what that tells me is that there are times when you are not to answer a fool, and there are times when you are to answer a fool, and those circumstances change, and why or why not do you do that?
Yeah. And it's important to be able to kind of sort that out a little bit. Let's go to Proverbs for a moment here. Proverbs chapter 10. The Proverbs are great for giving us some insight on personal character, I guess you would say. Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 20. As we just think about what should our response be sometimes. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is of little value. The lips of the righteous nourish many, but fools die for lack of judgment. Well, that's kind of a depiction here of, you know, two very distinct sides and even responses, attitudes. You know, the attitude here, the tongue of the righteous is like choice silver. The idea, you know, that if we speak from the heart and our heart is pure, our heart is righteous, then there's only good things that's going to come from that. But now, the heart of the wicked, well, the tongue is going to produce nothing of any value. It's only going to be things of the evil. So, Nehemiah, you know, he denied the accusations we read there in verse 9. Because, you know, an untruth does not need to go unaddressed. We may have to choose our time. We may have to choose what we say. I mean, we've seen that with Nehemiah already when there was an issue of some of the internal problems there in Jerusalem, where he was angry about it, but he thought to himself, he took some time to think how to respond. I kind of look at that or this in the same way. He took some time on how to respond. In the New Testament, Romans chapter 14, look over here for just a moment. There are some other passages here kind of come to mind just when I think about what our response should be, what our character should be, even when there are some maybe misusing us. Romans chapter 14 in verse 16. Here, in this part of chapter 14, there's just some good advice given on how to get along, I guess you would say. Romans 14, verse 16. Therefore, do not let your good be spoken of as evil. For the kingdom of God is not food and drink, but righteousness and peace and joy. Let's read a little farther. Verse 18. For he who serves Christ in these things is acceptable to God and approved by men. Therefore, let us pursue the things which make for peace and the things which one may edify one another. I got thinking about that some, just from the standpoint of even how do we respond to each other sometimes. And thinking some things through. And whatever we say needs to be for the point and the purpose of building up and edifying. Going back a couple of pages here, chapter 12, verse 21. Do not be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. Well, sure. I mean, that's our intent. That's our purpose. That's our design. And so we have to keep our behavior in line, even when there are others that are not, for the glory of God. Look at 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. And see, verse 11. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works which they observe glorify God in the day of visitation. Just a reminder again of how we need to be viewed by others, even by our enemies, as the text would say. I mean, the text tells us our enemies see what we're doing. Our enemies see our good works. They may not like it, but they see that. And even in the process of that, there can be glory given to God. So just some thoughts even on how we respond. Now, what was so wise? Again, looking for some responses here. What was, Brent, go ahead.
Later. Sometimes the fighting
and how we respond. Good thoughts.
Sometimes when someone says something bad about us, instead of responding to it, kill them with kindness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right. Good thoughts. Well, let's think a little bit farther with Nehemiah. See where the story goes here a little bit. You know, in verse 9, we read verse 9 already, you know, there in our text after this letter and kind of his response to it. And he acknowledges that they're just trying to frighten us. You know, that's what they're trying to do. That's what they want to do so they can stop the work here that's being done. But I prayed, now strengthen my hand. Vintage Nehemiah. I mean, I think it's been in every chapter. There's been events that have taken place that's caused Nehemiah to pray, to seek God's counsel, to seek direction, to seek help. And I think that's impressive, you know, to see that in him. You know, enemies lose strength when God is with us. And when they become fully convinced and understand that. And God can strengthen us and enrich our lives even in the midst of the most difficult and painful situations. God can give us strength. And another one of those lessons learned here from Nehemiah. At every turn in the road, Nehemiah remembered who he was, and he remembered who God was. But the personal attacks are going to continue still. I mean, there's still more that's going on. And I thought as I was looking at this and working on the lesson, it's kind of like, you know, there had to have been some times for Nehemiah where it must have looked awful nice just to run away, just to get out of this, you know. Of course, he never did that. And I don't know that he ever thought that. But I might have. Let's look at verse 10. One day I went to the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, and the son of Mehetabel, who was shut in his home. And he said, "Let us meet in the house of God inside the temple, and let us close the doors, because men are coming to kill you. By night they are coming to kill you." But I said, "Should a man like me run away? Or should one like me go into the temple to save his life? I will not go." I realized that God had not sent him, but that he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. And he had been hired to intimidate me so that I would commit a sin by doing this, and then they would give me a bad name and discredit me. Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, oh my God, because of what they have done. Remember also the prophetess Noadiah and the rest of the prophets who have been trying to intimidate me. And here's a whole nother level of enemies against Nehemiah. I mean, this is an inside job, so to speak. I mean, we have one here who is a prophet of God, supposedly, that has been hired by the enemies to undermine Nehemiah. You know, just some thoughts with this, you know. Does the plan of Shemaiah, the prophet, sound reasonable? I mean, as Nehemiah comes to him and called him and comes to him, he says, "Here, let's go to the temple. Let's lock the doors because there are men who are coming to kill you." Sound like a reasonable plan? I mean, it could. It could sound kind of reasonable to the minds of men. What's wrong with that?
It would have sounded reasonable to Nehemiah for a couple of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, he was a leader of the people. If he runs and hides, that's going to completely...
Everything stops.
Yeah, everybody else is going to run and hide.
Mm-hmm.
But it also would not have seemed reasonable to him because it was actually forbidden under the old law for him to go into the temple.
That's right.
He would have been breaking the law.
Yeah.
Numbers 151, says that only the priest were to go in, but the layman who comes near shall be put to death.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, here's just more, another side to the evil plot and the evil plan. You know, trying to scare Nehemiah, trying to intimidate, as he would say. You know, to cause him to do something that would be foolish, something that his enemies could hold against him, and something that he just knew was wrong. And that if there were, in fact, righteous Jews there and he went inside the temple, what would they have to do? Well, they'd have to kill him. I mean, so look at what's happening here. Look at how this is unfolding. And so an interesting thought here, too, as well, you know. Why do you suppose he went to talk to Shemaiah? I mean, I just get the impression here that, I mean, they knew each other. This is like a friend of his. Why else would he go to his house? I mean, here Nehemiah is the leader of all this work that's being done, and he goes to the house of Shemaiah. I mean, they must know each other. I mean, I kind of look at this as though here he has a friend now that's betrayed him. And this friend has other friends as well, who have been hired and who are working against Nehemiah, you know, at the temple, no less. But Jesus had enemies at the temple, right? I mean, there were those at the temple that were totally against and worked against Jesus in every way. And so now in some ways, I look at this as the personal attacks becoming more personal. You know, among those that Nehemiah knew who were working against him. And so we see what's wrong with the plan. We see that it would have been sinful for him to do that. We see that really just, we see what it would have done to the work if Nehemiah had just chosen to run away. He's not a man to run away. From the beginning of this whole project, he's a man who has come to the project. He came as a leader to make sure that this was done. And he hasn't changed that in any way. What about Nehemiah's prayer? I mean, here again, you know, second time here in just a few verses, remember Tobiah and Sanballat, O God. Remember what they have done. And he says, you know, remember the prophets, you know, that have spoken evil against me. What do you make of that prayer? Yeah, judgment's going to come from God. That's a good point. What else? I mean, we've seen a similar prayer from Nehemiah. I think it was chapter 2, perhaps. You know, when he was calling God's attention to those who have done evil. Not that God doesn't already know, but that Nehemiah has seen and recognized this and is saying, remember them for what they have done. Indeed, God will. You remember what we do. We'll be judged for what is good and what is evil when we stand before the judgment seat. So an amazing 52 days here, the walls have been built. Verse 15. So the wall was completed on the 25th of Iyul in 52 days. When all our enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of God. Also, in those days, the nobles of Judah were sending many letters to Tobiah, and replies from Tobiah kept coming to them. For many in Judah were under oath to him, because he was son-in-law to Shechaniah, son of Arah, and his son Jehoahan had married the daughter of Meshullam, son of Berechiah. Moreover, they kept reporting to me his good deeds, and then telling him what I said, and so Tobiah sent letters to intimidate me. So Tobiah had some influence because he had people under his thumb, so to speak, is what it sounds like. And Tobiah, even after all of this, continues to try to cause problems and wreak havoc. But for the most part, the enemies now, it kind of seems as though they're kind of backing up because they see what's been done. In 52 days, these walls have been rebuilt, and they realize this work had been done with the help of God. That's a pretty strong testimony, really, that they could see what had happened. They could see the work that had been done, and they knew that it was because of God's power that these things happened. What are your thoughts, comments? What's that say to us, Brent?
My favorite verse in all of Nehemiah is verse 11. And I think it's a verse.
is when God is on our side, we have nothing to fear, and we'll be blessed. Let's look at the second page here, or the back page, page 18. In the second half of the lesson, we've kind of used as making some application as we've gone through each of our lessons. You know, we see that Nehemiah was not easily fooled. Some could have been by the letters that came to him, but he saw through that. And as we're trying to make some application, I've thought of it this way, that leaders must prove themselves wise. And Nehemiah has done that. And in this chapter, I just see just several occasions where, in several ways, that he just proves himself to be wise. Wisdom would demand that spiritual leaders see through the trickery of evil men. There's a lot of application we can make from that. And we see that with Nehemiah that indeed he was able to do that. He could see through these things. You know, he didn't fall for every effort that came at him to fool him. And I ask the question, you know, would you have been fooled? And I mean, I know we're not in the story there with Nehemiah, but when we think about our own lives, there's probably some times all of us would have to say that, yeah, I got fooled. And I'm talking about just things from a spiritual basis. Times when we've done some things that we knew better than to do, but somehow was presented to us in such a way where it didn't look so bad. Or it looked even harmless, maybe. And think about Nehemiah. You know, wisdom would demand that we should be able to see through some of these things. You know, many of us can look back at times when we have had the wool pulled over our eyes, so to speak. You know, what did you learn? And I'm wanting to know your response. I mean, we don't have to have the details, but just what did you learn when you were fooled, when wisdom wasn't on your side? What did you learn?
Well, I don't know if I can cite an actual example of that, but I think the principle, I have a hard time trusting non-Christians, people that, or at least not other God-fearing, mm-hmm. people that I know to be God-fearing people mm-hmm. on one level or another. Because I really don't have any foundation or justification for believing people who don't know the Lord or don't have a relationship with God, because that's where our sense of right and wrong, mm-hmm. good and bad, evil and wicked mm-hmm. come from. If you don't have that, if a person in the world, a worldly person, mm-hmm.
then how do you make judgment?
That, right, how do they make judgments about things mm-hmm. if they don't know who the final and ultimate judge of all things is. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just part of, you know, these Sanballat and these other men who were against Nehemiah and the work that was going on, they were against God. Mm-hmm. They were worldly in their motivations. They certainly weren't on God's side, so they were on the other side. And Nehemiah did right not to believe them.
Right.
And that's something we can learn.
You know, one thing I wrote down in my notes was, open your eyes. And I've learned the lesson the hard way more than once, that sometimes you really have to open your eyes to some things that are going on because people will fool you. And even in regard to spiritual issues, that's what Satan's trying to do. He's wanting to fool us so that we would do what he wants us to do. That's what he's trying to do with Nehemiah. You know, and these others were being used in that way to try to fool him to do some things that he knew better than to do, but wisdom prevailed.
Well, you kind of look for the signs. You know, the passage you looked at Roman, when Paul's talking about living in peace, he's talking to people, and when he makes a defense for himself, you know, in some of the epistles, he's talking to people that are working at the same purpose. Their end game is the same. Sanballat and the ones that Nehemiah were dealing with, their end game was different.
Very different.
What is their consequence? If they're questioning what you're doing because they want to you have to look for those red signs and be able to put on the brakes, you know, when that happens.
Absolutely. You know, wisdom would demand that we think of things in a spiritual way. Wisdom would demand that spiritual leaders see through the trickery of men. We might talk about that just a little bit more next time, but we'll finish working on this page. The next lesson, lesson 10, is back here on the back. You might want to pick that up because we'll get into that here in our next session. Appreciate your comments this morning. Glad you're here. If you can, let's move up close.